Good evening, everybody. I'm Tom Lounges. You are listening to Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM. On the dial, that is, and of course, streaming worldwide wherever you may be. Thank you for joining us at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This is Midwest Beats. It's a show all about the arts, about music, about books, about theater. And today we're going to cover a little bit of everything. That's right. I've got Grant Fitch in here and Michael Massengill. And Michael is the owner and proprietor and a man about town in Hobart, Indiana. And he has the Green Door Bookstore, in which Grant is going to be gracing the threshold there to create a little bit of magical mystery, imagination, and horror. On Saturday, he will be portraying the works of Edgar Allan Poe, one of my personal favorites. And we're going to get to know Grant and Michael, and we're going to hear about Grant's history as an actor, and we're going to hear about Michael and his little shop of, interesting things that he does there.
A little shop of horrors.
Because it's a little bit on the dark side, some of the things they do. But let's open things up, as we often do here at Midwest Beat, by letting the music do the talking. And perhaps the regulars here will remember this one. It's early Alan Parsons and his treatment of interpreting Edgar Allan Poe. This is The Raven, and we'll hear the actual poem from Grant in just a moment. Stay with us, turn off the lights, and grab somebody close. It's going to be very scary tonight.
Must hear forevermore.
Quoth the Raven, nevermore. Edgar Allan Poe, American writer, editor, literary critic, alcoholic, drug user, and dead. That's right. He died in 1849 in Baltimore, Maryland. But Edgar Allan Poe will live again. He's going to rise from the ashes like a phoenix.
Oh, Lord.
In the person of Grant. Grant is with us. Grant, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Boy, from phoenixes to ravens. A lot of bird imagery.
That's true.
I have been acting and storytelling locally, Northwest Indiana and all over the Chicagoland for 20, 25 years.
Really?
Now.
Okay.
Doing a lot of community theater in that time, a lot of taking stacks of picture books and kids' stories to schools and libraries, as well as doing dramatic readings of classic literature for adults. Twain, Poe, Dickens, Kurt Vonnegut, just a lot of the classic authors, because while people think of storytelling as something that they do with the kids for the kids, it's not just for kids. We never mm-hmm. outgrow our need for stories. And there are so many wonderful stories out there. And I find that a lot of times adults of all ages, they want to hear a good story. Mostly around Halloween and Christmas. That's when they realize, you know, that they really want. I've got stories year-round and do a lot of things, especially for older groups, senior citizens and things like that, because they remember.
Right. And our eyesight goes, so we can't read like we used to.
That too. But they remember the oral tradition a little mm-hmm. bit more, you know. But certainly around Christmas time and around Halloween, people have their favorite stories and they want to gather around the campfire. Mm-hmm. You know, or around the hearth, or in a bookstore, you know, whatever.
In a bookstore,
and share some quality stories with a group of friends or a group of strangers, and be taken on that that journey. There's something unique about the connection between a storyteller and an audience. You know, it's just the words, and we're telling that story together. You know, that the audience is creating it in their minds and picturing it and going on that journey with me, and it's very exciting. And I've got some stories I've been telling for more than 20 years, and I keep doing it because every time I tell the story, it's a little bit different depending on who I'm telling it to and mm-hmm. how we're going through that.
So you take dramatic license with it a little bit.
I do a little. A lot of my stories, I have to do some editing. I'll change some words here and there, or just to make sure that people understand what I'm saying if there's mm-hmm. a particular difficult phrase. A lot of times I'm cutting, you know, just to make it quicker. Because it's a story that's good to read doesn't mean it's necessarily a good story that's good to perform. Mm-hmm. And so I'll take some liberties. I definitely look for a lot of stories that focus on dialogue. You know, so that I can play two people talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some, like Cats of Ulthar by Lovecraft, or Mask of the Red Death.
Oh, that's a good one.
That there's no dialogue at all. It's more of a fable, and the words, the colorful language, just flows one sentence into the other until it reaches a climax. So it's not just dialogue, you know. But I've got different kinds of stories for different occasions.
Now, what brought you into storytelling? As an actor, mm-hmm. you go on stage and you tell the story through your acting. This is a one-man show that you're going to do on Saturday at
right.
Green Door. You're basically, what's the word I'm looking for? You're recreating the Poe image, the Poe style, the Poe telling of the stories, mm-hmm. Personifying him, basically.
Right. Well, in the same way that you'd ask your friend Edgar, to come over, you know, one October night and share a couple of his stories.
Mm-hmm.
And people would, you know, back in the day, you know, certainly, I think of Charles Dickens, for instance, to switch holidays for a second, you know, he wrote Christmas Carol, and then he went on tour. For 20 years, Dickens performed a reading of Christmas Carol every year, went on tour with it, and basically it's the same thing that I do. This was before movies and whatever, and so right. they would have, their musician friend would entertain them on the piano, and then their storyteller friend would read one of his stories, And that's how they would entertain each other.
Are we seeing a resurgence?
Kind of doing the same thing.
Are we seeing a resurgence? Everything is retro. Like in my record store, vinyl is coming back.
It is.
We're seeing cassette tapes come back. We are living in an information. Not yet, and I hope not. But we're living in a generation now, in an age when technology, everything is within our grasp. We want instant gratification. Mm-hmm. Why are the old ways coming back? Are you seeing more teenage type kids as opposed to the little kids that like stories because they can't read? Old people like stories because we can't read, and it also triggers memories. But what about that middle ground? Are you seeing it, the current generation that's coming of age now? Are they coming to these events?
It is interesting that with all of the world, you know, at our fingertips, with technology, with streaming, with phones in our pockets and everything, that there is still this this option, and there is still an interest. You know, I used to be a children's librarian, a young adult teen librarian, and we had a lot of events where the teenagers were still coming in and wanting that. And these days, too, my events a lot of times are geared toward adults, but a lot of the kids come, a lot of the teenagers come.
I noticed your promo shot. It had children's books with it.
Yeah.
And you were sitting on, it looked like a library or a church stepway there, and you looked very... you know, very literary, with all these books around you. And I noticed they were children's titles. That kind of threw me for a loop because I only knew of you through Michael as Edgar Allan Poe. I didn't realize you did this whole full circle thing.
Right. That's one of the I've got a couple of photos out there for my advertising taken by my lovely and talented photographer wife, Carla. Got to give her credit. I have a lot of Halloween picture books and you know, stories for kids that I do. We do little ghost stories for them, and we sing the 12 Days of Halloween, you know, and that kind of thing. So that's always fun. But yeah, that adults are looking for the stories as well, looking to be entertained at this time of year. I've done The Legend of Sleepy Hollow a bunch of times. I've done Hitchcock and Lovecraft and a lot of other authors.
What Hitchcock do you do?
Poe. And what's fun, you know, when I say Hitchcock, the first thing I think of, Roald Dahl.
Okay.
You know, who wrote James and the Giant Peach and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and a bunch of those. He did a bunch of, he has a very dark sense of humor, as you remember. And so his dark sense of humor went toward making some very spooky short stories that Hitchcock used as episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. If you remember that old show.
I remember that show.
One of the classic episodes was called Lamb to the Slaughter, about a woman who murdered her husband with a frozen leg of lamb. And another one was called Man from the... Yeah. And that was written...
I missed that one.
It's classic. It's brilliant. And that was written by Roald Dahl.
Okay.
Another Roald Dahl favorite that I've performed a bunch of times is called Man from the South, in which he makes a bet that a lighter will light. It never fails. So if it lights 10 times, I will give you my Cadillac, the guy says. And if it doesn't light one of those times, I will cut off your little finger. So a bar bet that goes, you know, crazy, out of control, wrong. I'm going to forget his name now. From Dusk Till Dawn. Quentin Tarantino thought that was his favorite ever episode of Hitchcock, and he used it in a scene in a movie called about a hotel, Four Doors, I think it was called. Had a great time, you know, doing his riff on that episode, and that's another Roald Dahl story. So,
wow.
So yeah, I have a lot of stories from a lot of different sources, but my main guy is Poe, as you were saying. And what we're going to do on Saturday, we're going to do about 45 minutes maybe of some other authors, some other favorite stories, take a little break, like they're the opening act, right?
Okay.
And then I'll do a little bit of a costume change,
Poe.
And then I'm going to come back and do a solid
hour
of
Poe
stories. Well, ish.
Well, you've got the cemetery photos that
I
ran
do.
On Lakeshore Public Facebook page.
I should point out
page.
That the cemetery photo, that's actually my Dickens. Those were taken last year, again. Carla, thank you. those are my Scrooge pictures. I've been doing a one-man Christmas carol for more than 20 years.
I guess I can see that.
I started it as a reading, and then I said, oh, heck, I'll just memorize it. So now I have the whole 90 minutes of the original Dickens text in my head, and I perform the whole thing memorized.
That amazes
acted
me.
Acted all out.
The one-man
shouting
show.
At myself. It is funny. When Marley is screaming and Scrooge is cowering and I have to be both of them jumping back, it's very energetic. And I wear myself out trying to be Tiny Tim and Bob Cratchit and all the ghosts and everybody else. I play about 30 characters.
Wow.
In that story, and I think I lose about 5 pounds every time I do it.
Michael is with us, the owner of Green Door. Michael, tell us a little bit about Green Door. You started as a used bookstore. You now have some new stuff, but you have integrated local community artists there, and you have art exhibits monthly. Is that correct?
Yep. In fact, Friday, we're going to have a haunted house art show, which is a collaboration between, I think, 7 or 8 artists. And it works out well because the backdrop where the mural is going to be painted and where all their paintings are going to be displayed is where Grant's going to perform in front of. He's going to perform in front of a haunted house.
And they're going to be there Saturday also, right?
Some of them will. But Friday's going to be their night, and then Saturday will be reserved for Grant's performance.
You do so many wonderful events at the bookstore.
Well, the way I met Grant was through poetry. His wife does poetry, so you were just kind of tagged along for a little while.
And I did. She was reading some of her poetry, and we both come out for your zines and a lot of the local artists that showcase there.
Yeah, so yeah, in terms of art, it's zines, which could be written, all right, or self-published, and then we do art and spoken word and performance. Yeah, it's fun. So, I mean, the bookstore isn't something that we're trying to, we're not trying to be the next Amazon. We just want to be a fun kind of community hub, and I think we've done a pretty good job at it.
And a lot of your artists are on, is like to say, the dark side. I mean, you have kind of some creepy things there that are kind of creepy cool. I mean, you've had a lot of, seems like pen and ink kind of stuff, dark shadows, grays. I find that to be pretty captivating and fascinating, especially in an old building like yours with dusty books around it. Not to say they're dusty, you're going to come in and sneeze, but I'm just saying they are vintage books, they are old, and it sets the mood, I think, for scariness.
Sure, yeah, I think there's something gothic about bookstores, so yeah, we just embrace that, and it kind of worked out that way. The artists that we've kind of worked with, that's kind of their style, but it kind of all kind of happened organically, though, so I don't...
All right, we're going to play one more cut here from Alan Parsons, and then when we get back, Grant is going to do the Raven. Ooh. You're going to hear the actual poem. So settle in. Again, keep those lights turned low. Grab a cup of cocoa or a bourbon and sit by the radio, and we're going to keep you warm. But once again, this is Edgar Allan Poe. This is Alan Parsons' project and his take on one of my other favorite Poes. Annabelle's my favorite, Raven's second, and then this one. This is The Telltale Heart. We won't be for long.
but I could tell the sound was not within my ears. You should have seen me. You would have seen my eyes grow wide and cold with fear. Heard all the things in heaven and earth. I've seen many things in hell.
Edgar Allan Poe, my guest tonight, Grant Fitch, and Michael Massengill. Michael is the owner of Green Door Books, and Grant is the storyteller, actor, who's going to be there on Saturday doing Edgar Allan Poe. And in a moment, he's going to give you the full rendition of The Raven, which, of course, is a classic. Everybody knows The Raven that knows Edgar Allan Poe. But since we did just play Telltale Heart, Grant, you're going to treat us to a little something from
that? Yeah, yeah. I love this story, and You were saying during the break there that there's a real sense of humor to it too. It's the spooky but funny part is how convinced he is. It's much more important for him to for him to make you understand that he is not crazy. He will tell you all about the murder because he's not trying to get away with anything. He doesn't want to be found not guilty. He wants to be found not crazy. So this is how he starts, and this is one of those times where you can really tell that this is something that the author dealt with as well. He had an overacuteness of the senses himself, so he poured a lot of himself into a lot of his stories. Let me get into my crazy frame of mind here. True, nervous, very, very dreadfully nervous I had been, and am. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing, acute. I could hear all things in the heavens and in the earth. I could hear many things in hell. Why, then, will you say that I am mad? Hearken, and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story of how I murdered the old man.
I love it. Very
good. And you guys are locked in this room with me.
That's true. But lucky it is padded in here. That's right. You think it's for the acoustics. Oh, man. So before we get into The Raven, Mike, let me throw it back to you. What is it about Grant that made you think this was a great thing to do this year? This kind of came up last minute. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, it seems.
Well, no, it was in the works for a little bit.
Was it? Okay.
So
you've kept a secret from me.
Yeah, among other things. So Grant had performed one time kind of impromptu. We had a poetry reading, I remember, and it wasn't a great turnout. So we're like, come on, someone want to read? And then Carla kind of volunteers, like, Grant's got a lot of really good stuff. And like, wait, Grant, you've been hiding this? I didn't really know much about Grant as a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
I
was just there as Carla's arm candy.
Exactly.
Until then.
And you performed, I think it was a Shel Silverstein poem, and it was awesome. And so Teresa, my fiance, said, you know, we need to go see him perform live. So you were doing
a musical parody in Michigan City. Musical of musicals, yeah.
And I didn't know any of the references because I'm bad. I haven't really seen a lot of musicals, but it was hilarious. And Grant was amazing. So we left and we're just both smiling and like we both said to each other, we need to get Grant to perform at the store. And then she's like, well, tell, you know, ask him. And she's been poking me for probably over a month.
Right.
Ask him. The day, one day we were talking about it in the store, I promise you this is true, you walked by.
Yeah.
Just like, nonchalant. You don't even live in Hobart. You just you walk by our store.
You must have been coming to the record bin.
Oh, it was closed. No, maybe it was. But anyways,
well, I heard you calling to me.
Yeah, it's psychically. So it's really bizarre, right? But I was like, Grant, would you be willing to perform at a certain? You'd even hesitate, like, sure, I'll do it. And we're super excited because you just heard him kind of.
Yeah.
I mean,
Do you want to say anything about how to get tickets?
Oh yeah, we do have a few limited tickets left on our Facebook page. If you go to Green Door Books on Facebook, you can buy them through there. Mm-hmm. We only have a few left. We were talking before in the what is that, a green room?
Green room.
Yeah, I was in the green room.
It's not green though.
Yeah, so I was in the
no
room.
No green room is ever green.
That's true.
I've noticed.
We're open to maybe even doing another date because there has been some really great demand for it. So, we're not opposed to maybe doing the day after or maybe the following weekend. But we'll update that on our Facebook page and let people know.
We were talking about doing something for Christmas as well.
Yeah.
Okay, doing a Dickens kind of thing?
Yeah.
That would be great. And again, Green Door Books is in downtown Hobart at 220 Main Street. It is literally next door to the Art Theater. Everyone can find the art. It's between the Art Theater and the record bin. Right across the street from the post office. So landmarks right there, the Art Theater and the post office. You cannot miss Michael's business there. And we're gonna talk a little bit about future things as well and how he got into the books and stuff in just a bit. But I want to make sure we can fit in the entire performance of The Raven. So, again, our guest is Grant Fitch. Michael's got him performing this Saturday. And am I correct in saying it's 7 to 9, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
7 to 9 at Green Door Books at 220 Main Street. And tickets are available at Green Door Books on Facebook. And is there a website too, or just Facebook?
Just go to Facebook.
Go to Facebook.
Probably, yeah, we got to work that out. It's our first one, so.
All right. So tickets are on sale there. Information is there as well. And Grant, if you are ready, all right, we're going to do The Raven.
Once, upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore. While I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. Only this and nothing more. Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, or "madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door that I scarce was sure I heard you." Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortals ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore," that I whispered. And an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore." Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again came tapping, something louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more." Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven, of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marveled this ungainly fowl dare discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock in store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore of never and ever more. But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then, upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet violet lining, with a lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press. Ah, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee respite, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh, quaff this kind nepenthe and forget the lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still of bird or devil, where the tempest sent or where the tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me, truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still of bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aiton it shall clasp a sainted maiden, whom the angels name Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden, whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Take thy beak, quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting. Still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted. Nevermore.
The Raven, Edgar Allan Poe. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Amazing, Grant. I was like holding my breath. I was like waiting. I love it. You've been doing Poe how long?
Poe, let me answer it in the form of a story.
Okay.
You stories?
What? Some 20 to 22, 23 years ago, I was a children's librarian, and I was doing a bunch of children's stories like you do, and I had the idea to perform Christmas Carol. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do something for family, something for adults, and I'd seen people do a reading of Christmas Carol, and I was like, oh, that would be cool. Let's do that. So I did that, and it went over very well, and I just enjoyed the heck out of it so much. And it was kind of like my theater, only doing it by myself, you know. And so it was this blend of the storytelling and the acting. And as soon as I got done with that, I thought, well, what else can I do? And the immediate next thing was Edgar Allan Poe. I had already memorized The Raven, and I thought, oh, well, that's a good place to start. Let me find a couple of other stories by Poe, a couple of other stories by other authors. Mm-hmm. And I put together Creepy Classics the following Halloween. And for the rest of the time I was at the library, I did stories at Halloween and stories at Christmas. And then I started doing stories year-round as well. And then once I left the library, I found that people, schools, other libraries, kept asking me to come and do it there. Mm-hmm. They offered to pay me. And I was like,
hey, that's cool.
Let's do that. But yeah, the whole storytelling career kind of started because of Poe. So Poe has been part of it since the beginning. Poe and Twain and Dickens, you know, way back at the beginning. Because I've loved Edgar Allan Poe since I was a kid. There's something primal, I think, about his stories, and it speaks to the darkness within. Mm-hmm. And if you're a weird kid, you have darkness within when you're a kid, mm-hmm. instead of waiting until you're an adult to discover the darkness. But I just love Poe, you know, my whole life, and so this was a chance to really enjoy some of the stories that I had loved as a kid and share them with other people.
What library did you work for?
Lansing Library, Lansing, Illinois.
Really? Mm-hmm. I'm actually doing a show there with the Spaniels.
Oh, wonderful.
February.
They have me back every once in a while. They still love to see me. The Crown Point Library, big fans. I still, you know, I don't do it as much as I used to.
By choice or?
Well.
Are you tired of doing it?
My career had a heyday.
Okay.
It's faded in the last few years, partly because I'm kind of on to other things. I've been doing a lot more theater and yeah, I am old and tired. There's that. but it's been coming back a little bit too. The last couple of years, I've seen kind of a resurgence of both Halloween and Christmas storytelling. Last year, I performed the One Man Christmas Carol four or five times, which is as much as the last two or three years before that combined. So it's kind of coming back again.
How do you edit it? I mean, Christmas Carol was a thick book, as was many of Poe's pieces. Mm-hmm. But you said you do an edit job. How do you edit it without losing
wanted to do? Telltale Heart takes about 15 to 20 minutes to read as it is, and it's fine. I mean, every word of it is perfect. But I've gotten it down to about 10 because it really crackles when I do that, you know. Mm-hmm. So Dickens, for editing Dickens down from 3 or 4 hours probably to read every word to the 90 minutes that I do, my starting point actually was Charles Dickens himself. As I said, he used to go on tour with it, performing mm-hmm. it, and so I found his edited transcript, so the cuts that he made and the changes that he made to perform it. So that was my starting point. And then I would be like, well, he cut that, but I like that, so I'm going to put that in. And then I'm like, oh, wait, he left that in? That's stupid. I don't want to do that. But it was a really good starting point, mm-hmm. you know. And so, and a lot of it, too, because I had seen so many film versions of Christmas Carol. I mean, it's just a huge fan of that story. I had seen so many different editions. So very much something that, you know, and any bit of dialogue that's in several of the movies. Oh, I got to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there was but what was neat about Dickens too is that there's several scenes that I do where I wanted to show you this is a scene you've never seen in any of the movies, or this is a very different version of a scene that you've seen in the movies. So it's interesting to see how Dickens describes the Ghost of the Christmas Past in a way that you really can never film it. Or or his description of what happens at Fezziwig's party, or some of the stuff that happens in the future hardly ever gets into any of the movies, and I definitely wanted to keep some of that in. Even if Dickens didn't care as much about it, I wanted to see it. And there's a really heartbreaking moment where, in the past, Scrooge actually sees his old girlfriend with her new husband and their kids, and he's like, shoot.
Wasn't that in the original?
He said that could have been me.
Yeah.
And they hardly ever do that.
Yeah.
In fact, Dickens himself said, oh, that's a dumb scene. I don't want to do that. And I'm like, no, we're putting that in, baby, because I love that. It breaks his heart because he's got, oh, look at these beautiful children. They could have been my children, but I'm a dummy.
I remember seeing that for the first time this past Christmas. It was one of the very old black and white ones.
Alistair Sim, or even older than that?
It might have been Alistair.
Yeah, 1951, I want to say.
Yeah. And they had that, and I'd not heard that part of the story before.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is a good one. He really eats his heart out.
He does. That's the beauty. I think that one of the neat things about it is that a lot of times, whether it's George C. Scott or Henry Winkler in The American Christmas Carol or whoever, or Bill Murray.
Let's not even go there.
It's important for them, for whatever reason, to have Scrooge just be a jerk and be angry for the whole movie. And then he sees himself die, and that's the turning point. But I love what Dickens does. He is changed almost from the beginning. He sees himself as a child. Well, he's shaken just by seeing Marley. And then seeing himself as a child and as a young man changes him already. So he's weeping. He's thinking fond thoughts of his sister. And when the ghost of the present comes to him, he says, you know what? I was not in the mood yesterday. I went out with the ghost of Christmas past against my will. But you know what? I learned some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and be a better person. Show me something. Show me some good stuff, and I'm going to be happy to see it. So he's already changing. You know, so when I like that, I like that Dickens does that differently than a lot of the movies does, which is showing him changing and wanting to change throughout his entire story. And so it's little bits like that that I like to compare and contrast.
One of the things when I talk to actors that seem to be a common thread is the fact that actors like to be able to live different lives, even if it's just for a little bit, just to escape from the normal. And whether it's as in a Western or a comedy or a musical or a dark tale, what got you into acting? Not so much storytelling, but acting. And at what point? What was the trigger for you that said, this is what I want to do?
Oh, exactly. It is a lot of it is about pretending, about stepping into somebody else's skin. One of the things I've always liked about it is not just being somebody else, but knowing what you're supposed to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because in real life, we don't always know what we're supposed to say. In fact, most of the time, the script writer is not doing his job.
Right.
But you get on stage and you're in My Fair Lady or in, you know, you can play Charlie Brown or you're going to play Sherlock Holmes or whoever you're playing. The words are there. You know what you're supposed to say. And you're going to be brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a jerk. I was the boss in 9 to 5.
Okay.
Right? I play a lot of villains. Which is great.
Did you play it like Dabney Coleman did? Or?
More or less. I was in The Crucible once, and so I was the main witch finder. I, you know, was hanging people who were accused of being a witch, but I was doing it for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I was a racist redneck in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay.
You know, and that was a bit of a stretch. So I play a lot of bad guys, and it can be really interesting to live, you know, somebody else's life. And then, you know, be able to put my own shoes back on, of course. But yeah, I think pretending was right there early on when I was a kid.
Okay.
You know, so I didn't get into.
Did you do high school theater or any of that?
I did a little. I very little. I hung out with the theater kids, you know, but I never quite got up the nerve to go do it. And then I went off to college and just dove right in as soon as I got there. In fact, I told the people at my college that I had done a bunch of theater in high school, you know. So I gave them a made up resume because they don't know.
Right.
They don't really care.
Right.
What have you done before? Oh, I played the title role in Harvey. Thank you for laughing at that, because of course Harvey
The invisible.
Harvey is an invisible 6-foot-tall rabbit, so I play the title role in Harvey. Nobody ever caught that, so I got away with it. Until, you know, until after a couple of shows, then I had something to actually put on my resume.
Wow.
But, so I was a liar. I guess I was a pretender and a liar from an early age, you know.
You were acting.
I was acting.
There he is.
Acting like an actor.
If you just tuned in, I'm Tom Lounges. This is Midwest Beat. And we are having a good time talking about Edgar Allan Poe. And we've got Grant in here doing character voices, telling stories just like he'll do on Saturday at Green Door Books. Michael is here, the owner of Green Door Books. And we're talking about how some things are kind of secular as far as coming back in vogue again and record vinyl storytelling. Michael, you took a big risk opening a bookstore a few years ago because people were saying, well, who reads books anymore? Everything's on cell phones and tablets and all that stuff. What was the muse that you tapped into that made you think that was a good idea? Because clearly it's growing. It's developing into all these different facets. But what made you say, I'm going to put some old books on the shelf and see if anybody comes?
Well, I think you see this with your records too. I think people want to go back to ownership. I mean, because for a while there, we were just proud of just consuming things but never owning it, right? Streaming music. Reading on your Kindle, you can't give that to somebody. You can't cherish it. You know, you can't earmark a book that's in the ether or wherever it is. Yeah. You know, same thing with music. You know, find a great album. You know, I think I watch people in your store when they grab a record. It's not just they're not just remembering the music. They're remembering that very that cover art and I think there's something that we always want that, we cherish that. We might have forgotten because we were so excited during this like technology boom that like everything was at our fingertips. But I think we're coming back and realizing we need, actual communities. We need to listen to storytellers. We need to buy real music and books. And I think we're going back down to what it is to be human.
Right. The last popular or star storyteller that I can remember is Spalding Gray.
Okay.
Are we seeing more younger people, more actors going into this kind of acting, this storytelling role in today's generation? Is it coming back or are we just revisiting the past with all the old authors and doing the tried and trues? Do you think we're going to see more creative writing where it's monologues and shows like that?
I'd like to think so. There's you talk about monologues. People like David Sedaris, who are writing monologues, not just to be read, but to be performed. He goes on NPR and he tells his stories of working in the Santa Land. Or, he's got several books now of his essays, and I love reading his stuff to myself or aloud. Just grab somebody and make them listen to me read. because like a lot of, younger people, they are writing to be read, writing to be read aloud, writing to be performed. It's like John Mulaney or a lot of the big, stand-up comedians. They're telling stories. And they want to be heard. And I think that's where a lot of the storytelling is going nowadays. People don't label themselves as storytellers. They say, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. But they're storytelling. If you look at what Jim Gaffigan is doing or...
Local boy.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the great stand-up comedians, they're just telling stories and they're riffing and it's wonderful.
Do you do a lot of that? Do you ever do like an improv night that go up there and just do free form flowing thoughts and create things? Or if I say, Grant, tell me a story about a piece of toast in the morning. I mean, can you come up with a story to go with something?
I know some people who are very talented improv artists. I don't know if I really count myself among them. I can bull shirt with the rest of them, but I don't think I'm one of the good ones. I mean, when you see things like Whose Line or something like this, they do some wonderful things, and there are some local groups that do some wonderful things in terms of improv. I wish I could. I'd like to be able to do that a little bit more. I like my scripts. I like my stories. People say, well, have you written a book? No. I'm content telling other people's stories, you know, mostly. Every once in a while, I'll write a little something of my own. But even then, you know, I prefer to have it practiced. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. You know, a lot of your stand-up comedians, they may be riffing, but they're riffing off of something that they have spent a lot of time writing very carefully.
It may sound off the cuff, but
it's not. Off the cuff, exactly. A lot of the stories I do actually as for the children, a lot of the picture books that I do started out as reading the words that are on the page, and then I've added so much over them. Mm-hmm. I have a few of my children's books that have become my own little stand-up routines where about half of the words that I'm saying
are not in the book.
All right. I'm sure people every once in a while go and find Stephanie's Ponytail by Robert Munch or one of the pigeon books and go, wait.
That's not the story he told.
That's not it. That's not the way Grant told it.
Must be the Cliff Notes. For those of you that are old enough to remember Cliff Notes. We are just about out of time. Grant Fitch has been our guest. Michael Massengill. Michael's the owner of Green Door Books. Grant will be there on Saturday from 7 to 9. It's a whole Halloween weekend, though. You've got an art exhibit on Friday, Grant on Saturday. And artists will be there both days if you want to do a meet and greet with local artists and purchase their art, perhaps.
On Friday?
Yeah. Didn't you say Friday?
Yeah.
You do an art exhibit and then a little on Saturday as well?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some artists there. But like I said, Saturday's going to be Grant's day, though.
Okay.
We're going to have kind of moving stuff out of the way because we got to clear the floor.
Build a little stage.
Yeah. Borrow some of your chairs.
All two of them. All two of them. All right.
Scouring the neighborhood for more chairs.
And how do we get the tickets again, real quick?
Go to the Green Door Books Facebook page and click through the event there, and then we have the tickets on there.
All right. Grant, awesome. Is there a website for you?
I have a Facebook page as well, Grant Fitch Stories for Life.
All right, Grant Fitch Stories for Life and death, too, if it's Edgar Allan Poe. All right, we're going to close out with some more Alan Parsons. The Cask.
Edgar Allan Parsons.
Revenge upon Fortunato. Smile in his face, I'll say, come, let us go. I've a cask of Amontillado. Sheltered inside from the cold of the snow. Follow me now to the vault down below. Drinking the wine as we laugh at the time, which is passing incredibly slow.